Mr. Conroy, how are you?
Good, good. How are you guys doing?
We're hanging in here.
We're doing our best. Like
it's the new normal.
About pigeons now?
Yeah.
Sure, major pigeon issues.
Yeah. Look, you live in a condo downtown. You got to deal with pigeons. It's like a yearly battle. I've been in this condo for 6 years, and every spring you have to fight these things off. They try to nest and find their way into your barbecue. It's an urban hazard, Connie.
That's unbelievable. I never thought about it. That would be a pain. They could be a pain for sure.
Start nesting and
Connie,
lay eggs. It's no good.
Dennis Weidman called me a pigeon. What does that mean?
Well, that's not a good thing.
No.
That's not a good thing.
I don't know if you remember his.
I think I call Ryan Leslie a pigeon season. Too, so it's not a good thing.
I was not hesitant to point out he was on the ice for like a brutal goal against for about 8 games in a row that second last season. I don't know that we saw eye to eye on his play at the end of his time in Calgary.
I can actually see that. I might have stolen the pigeon thing from Wise. You know, Wise was awesome. We get a little sensitive. When we get sensitive, we just throw out the pigeon thing because no one really likes pigeons. So I think that's part of it.
It's pretty universal. It's my most funny Weidman story ever, and I still think that this grinds Labardius's gears a little bit, but had Labardius on the air. It was after a World Junior game, so it would have been late December, early January a number of years ago, and it was the Canada-Finland game, and I think Finland won the game 6-5. It was in Finland. The Finns went on to win the gold that year, and we were just talking about how great a game it was. And Lou was going on about how only in junior hockey, only at this tournament can you get games like that, that type of stuff. So we go in the locker room. It was either the same day or the next day. It must have been the next day. And Weidman was listening to that hit, and he goes, "Hey, Labardius, if you love junior so much, why don't you go back and ride the bus?" He does that in the middle of the locker room to Labardius, and Lou was not having it. He was not the happiest of campers with that remark.
Oh, you know, that's the one thing about Wise. Like, if you said something or you misquoted something or you did, like, he was quick, very quick. Like, you know, him and Bob used to have spar back and forth. And I'll admit, he's one of my favorite guys, though. I mean, and the one thing about him, he's, like, very smart hockey-wise. Like, not much got past Wise. Like, you'd say, "Hey, you got to do this or that." Then he would come back with something. You're like, "What? Oh, that kind of makes more sense than what I just said to him." Like, you know, that's what it was with dealing with him. But he's quick and he's smart and he knew the game really well. You know, and he had him and Bob didn't see eye to eye early. Then they got along really well. And then it went sideways a little bit again at the end.
Yeah, he was a beauty. One of my he always gave you a good quote, and he was always ready to chirp you if you deserved chirping, which usually everybody in the media deserves every once in a while. Craig Conroy is with us. Hey, we had Brad Treliving was on the morning show today. We had him on Friday after your team signed a pair of college free agent, couple of left shot defensemen. And Brad was very quick to talk about your role and your impact in doing that, gave you a ton of credit. So take us through the process of signing Colton Poolman and Connor Mackey, a couple of college free agent defensemen.
You know, it's amazing. Like it starts so, you know, like everybody thinks, "Oh, maybe just on that day when you sign them," but you're really building relationships with these guys. You're trying to make them feel comfortable. I mean, even for, you know, with Connor Mackey, he came to our development camp. I'm not even sure what year, like it was so long ago. Jimmy Cummins found him, like said, "Hey, this is a guy we got to invite to development camp." And then after that, we get to know him. And then he went in USHL. He played, you know, kind of everywhere. He kept getting better, So we've been building that relationship over time. And then when Billy Powers came on board as our college guy, Jimmy's like, "Hey, this is a guy to watch." And then, I mean, we've just been building that relationship. And it's weird with him particularly, I offered him 3 contracts. So I'm glad he took the third one, because the third one was 3 strikes and you're out. It was one where last year when they got knocked out, he got kicked out of the game. I was actually at the game with Billy. And, you know, to lose, they had one of the better teams. You know, they're thinking they're going to go to the Final Four. They just take a bunch of penalties. It doesn't go well. They end up losing that game. He got kicked out. He hit a guy. I mean, he just hit a guy hard. He didn't, like, but he's a bigger guy, so it looked like kind of a little bit of a headshot. And in the NCAA, they kick you right out. It's It's disappointing, but that's what they do. So I think he was upset about that, but he, you know, so he kind of said, hey, he went back with the team, just said, hey, I'm not going to come out this year. I'm going to go back for my junior year. And I thought, oh, okay. You know, that was a lot of work not to get him. And then when we had the injury with Valimaki, I called him in August and said, well, I know you're getting ready for school here in about 3 weeks, but would you have any, you know, would this be something? And they took probably 3 or 4 days and they were pretty interested, but I think he really did want to go back and try to win a national championship with his guys. They all went back. So again, I missed out. So I'm like, man, this is painful. So to actually get it done this time, it feels like, you know, it was a long time coming, but definitely, you know, excited that we got it done and brought him in, because Brad's mandate going into the year was, hey, we have to try. We haven't, you know, with losing Fox, you know, in the trade, we really didn't have many deep prospects as far as draft picks and that. So that was one of the priorities going in. We needed to find, you know, college guys or European guys, whatever it might be. We got to supplement in that, you know, with that. So long story short, going into the season, you know, Colt Pullman was one of the guys high on Billy's list too. So the two of them are like right at the top of the list. And, you know, to be able to kind of go and get them both was pretty special for us. We feel like, hey, we got two, you know, high end quality individuals. I mean, I think when we went to watch both those guys play against each other, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a great weekend. And I went down and saw Colton after the games and just spoke to him and got a feel. And, you know, you talk to the coaches, and with Brad Pascal's relationship with North Dakota, you know, they definitely, when you hear those guys talk about Colton, I mean, out of the 14 years, I think he's, you know, the coach has been there. He said, this is one of the highest character guys that we've had in our program, and they've had some unbelievable players go through there. So yeah, to hear them say that, you know, and that's, you just like the player, he work, you know, the compete, the, he's going to do everything for the team, like the way he trains, the way he does everything, you know, he's already a pro in their mind. You know, he's like the guy you don't have to say anything to, you got to pull him back a little bit. So to get two guys like that, you know, especially left D, you'd think, oh, you know, but that's what they're about. They're about, hey, we want to come compete, and we want to win with the Calgary Flames. So it's pretty exciting to get those guys, because last year we didn't end up getting any college guys. And it does, but you have 107 points, and if people don't think you have a weakness, they're not going to sign with you. So, I mean, it's a good thing that people didn't want to sign with us, but in this situation, I mean, it's so hard. You saw us go get the 2D right at the trade deadline, and it's something that we need. We're just lacking that in the organizational depth, and, you know, now we feel we've really secured that up with those two guys.
It's funny you talk about the process of signing Connor to that, to finally getting him to agree. I don't know if we're always 100% aware of how much work goes into signing these guys, because the Flames were the only team that was after Connor Mackey. He was like the most sought after college free agent, or one of them, this time around. So you'd been working on this for years. It wasn't just like, oh, well, he's coming out all of a sudden. You've got a couple of weeks to try to convince him. Like this was a long process. That's kind of the case with a lot of these guys when you're trying to convince them to choose your organization, right?
Totally. I mean, you're building relationship. It's just like if you're recruiting for college, or, you know, you don't draft these guys. You have to go out there and actually, you know, sell what the Calgary Flames are all about, what the city's all about, you know, opportunity for the guys. I mean, I think they, let's be honest, like that's what agents are looking at. They're looking at depth charts, and they want to know, you know, that you're committed to their guy and there's an opportunity for them to play in the NHL. And that's, you know, that's what everybody wants, is that opportunity to say, hey, you know what I mean? There was times, I think, when I was recruiting right at the beginning, it was weird to hear some guys when we weren't doing well, we were losing, we needed some wingers at the time. And, you know, college free agents were going to places like Philly and Toronto with all of these guys that they had. I'm like, it's weird because I don't see a fit, but, you know, they just love the team. They grew up in the area. They wanted to stay out east. You know, for those different reasons, it seemed like we battled. So as the process has gone along, you know, we've definitely been more in touch and trying to build some kind of relationship. We would love for these guys to come to development camp because that really lets us meet them and then see what it's all about and see what Calgary's all about. But, you know, it's hard because usually we have it around July 4th and, you know, some guys have it right after the draft. So people commit to that, you know, with school and stuff like that, they're going back after to do summer classes. It just hasn't worked out as much as we want. But if we could ever get them in here, it's a huge sell because they get to see the city. If the Stampede's going on, that's always exciting for the guys, you know, a little bit, see what's going on there. And then, you know, you're really selling with the staff, with the coaching staff. They get to meet everybody, and that's a huge bonus for us. You know, and Billy Peters, I will say, was a big help with, you know, even though Billy's not here anymore, he was a big help with Connor. Like, he called Connor, watched games on video, and they, you know, we went and met Connor in September before the season because we try not to bug the guys too much during the season, you know, just like to say hello and little things like that because you don't want to do too much. And, you know, I think Billy talking to him made a big impression, you know, to kind of the process, even though he's not here, you know, to know that, hey, our coaches are actually taking interest and they're a part of it too. Because they're the ones that are going to give you the ice time, you know.
That's interesting. Never, and it's funny because you talk about you called him before the season began after the Valimaki injury happened in August. So there, like, if you were trying to convince him to come then, like, you must have some pretty high expectations for the young man. Like, this guy seems like he's pretty pro ready. Potentially, could step into an NHL lineup if the situation arose.
You know, I think both guys, they're older. I mean, that's the thing about the college guys. They are a little older. You know, they went through some drafts, but everybody develops at a different pace, especially defensemen. That's the one thing I think in college you can really, you know, because it's easy to see the high-skilled forwards. That's part of it. But the defensemen, some of them just take longer. But big guys, they skate well, they compete, they do everything. And there's such a premium on defense in the NHL right now. I mean, it's one of those where, yeah, you're hoping they come in and compete right off the bat to be in the NHL. That's the ultimate goal. I mean, you're getting these guys. I remember when we were on Danny DeKeyser, and then he went right to Detroit and played. It's just, you know, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but they're older, they're more ready than if you're getting an 18, 19, 20-year-old coming out of junior, for sure. If you just draft somebody, they're just physically men, and they're ready to play against men.
He is the assistant general manager of the Calgary Flames. Craig Conroy joining us on this Wednesday afternoon on Pinder and Steinberg.
Connie, it's interesting you mentioned development camp, and I remember when I was in Abbotsford in the organization, just some of the names from just those two summers of development camps, Noel Achari, Frank Vetrano, Carter Rowney was a guy that was on a PTO at that time. Like, if you were to come up with a list of NHLers that had been your development camps, I feel like it would really surprise the number of fans how many you know, end up having really good NHL careers when they're just a name on a list for most fans if they're going out to Winsport to check out some of these skates.
Totally. I mean, that's the thing. I think, you know, our college guys have always done a great job identifying the right players and then being able to get them in here. Obviously, you know, even though you bring them into camp doesn't mean they're going to be there. But, yeah, the list is pretty long when you kind of you look back and you'd be amazed if there's probably 10 or 12 guys that have played in the NHL that came to our development camp. You know, Brad's always like, well, why didn't you sign this guy or that guy? I'm like, well, you know, we tried. We were in, like, so many. I mean, we're not the only team watching them. So there's, you know, if there's – and that's the thing. When you can get it, you only have 7 draft picks unless you get some extra picks. So to kind of – these guys supplement if you don't have a second or third rounder, they really are key moving forward, especially in the cap – kind of era. But to bring him into development camp, you know, Garnet Hathaway, we got signed. He came in, you know, to sign Josh Juris out of it. We've gotten some to stay, and then we've actually, like the name that you just mentioned, actually went away. And, you know, you watch him and you're like, hey, at least we're on the right guy. This is still something we have to continue to get better at and trying to identify the right guys. But I think since the 9 years I've been doing it, it's probably 8, 9, 10 guys that have played in the NHL that have been to development camp, but just some are here and some decided to go somewhere else.
You mentioned Adam Fox earlier. We're bouncing around a bit, but we love picking your brain. You surprised at all the season he's put together with the Rangers, 42 points, his first year in the NHL through 70 games, and seemingly playing a big role on a surprising Rangers club. And I guess maybe just revisit that situation. Through 3 years, he'd essentially given you guys the Heisman on trying to sign him, and there was a thought that would be tough work to get done.
Yeah, I mean, it is frustrating because, you know, you make a good draft pick. The way he kind of, in college, he was one of the top college players almost every year, especially as a defenseman. And with his brain and his passing, and you know, I'm not surprised he's doing it. I mean, we really thought this is what he was going to be, you know, a right-handed defenseman that's going to be great on the power play, and just his passing vision, and it's high, high end. So everything we thought, Jimmy Cummins made a great draft pick with that one. That was his guy from day one in September. We had to have, no matter what. So I give Jimmy tons of credit. Unfortunately, you know, he went to, you know, going to school, it looked like he was going to go back, and we just couldn't afford to lose someone in, you know, just for nothing. So we got our hand got forced a little bit for sure, but, you know, in the end, I guess it's better that they were more honest with us and kind of, hey, we're probably going to go back for our senior year. And that, even without saying it, that probably tells us what's going to happen. So with that said, you know, we were able to make that deal with Carolina, and, you know, to get Hanifin, you know, to get those two guys that we got back in that trade. I mean, and I think that did push it over the top to get the deal done. So, you know, to get Lindholm and Hanifin was big. Always would have liked to kept Foxy, but, you know, it just wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, and then the other part that I wonder, like, how much of that is a bluff? Like, obviously, you know, most U.S. college guys would love the idea of playing on Broadway, and, well, I'm not going to sign. How do you sort of try to measure that, what they're saying they're going to do versus what, you know, perhaps they're trying to put in front of you to sway to get what they want? I mean, would he really have gone back for a fourth year at Harvard after dominating that league for 3 years? Like, I find that sort of a fascinating conversation that you and Brad and the other folks in the organization would have had to have measured, I guess.
I mean, it's tough, but he's such a good student, and it's Harvard, you know. I mean, yeah. I think, you know, it is Harvard, and to get that Harvard degree, and it's not like you can take, like Brian Burke always said, like, Tony, you can't take Harvard classes in the summer. Like, that's just not, you don't do that. So he's not getting ahead. He's not doing that. He just, you know, you actually have to be on campus, I guess, Burke was saying. You can't do it online. You can't do, you know, maybe like some other things. And I don't even know if that's true. That's what Burke told me. So, you know, I just felt like to get that Harvard degree, as good a student as he was, it's a great situation. He liked it there. You know, you're kind of playing, you know, chicken going back and forth, but for him to say, you know, that's what the plan was. I mean, he didn't come to the last development camp either. He kind of Heisman'd us on that also. So the writing was a little bit on the wall. You know, would I have loved to kept him? For sure. But to get that deal pushed over the line, I think with Carolina, you know, Brad, even though he didn't want to do it either, it just was something we felt like, hey, these are two very, very good players that are going to be part of our team for a while. And, you know, even though we don't want to do it, let's do it. But it's tough to watch him. You know, you get a little, especially when he comes in here and has, what, he had 4 points? I wasn't here for the game, but that made me a little crazy. I would have liked to play it against him just to get a little chop, maybe. But, you know what? I mean, that's the world we live in. It's a business. Everybody's doing what they feel is best for themselves. And, you know, I would love to kind of knock that loophole away in the next CBA. I mean, that would be one thing I would like for us to put in there. If you draft a player and you're going to sign a player and you're going to give them the max of what you can give, I think you should be rewarded for that good pick, not just say, you know what, I'm going to go 4 years of Harvard and then leave. That rubs me a little the wrong way, but you know what, that's the rule right now. So we have to live with it.
Yeah, fair enough. Craig Conroy is AGM of the Calgary Flames, joining us here on Pinder and Steinberg.
Connie, I and to totally switch gears on you, I was thinking about this after you joined us last week and told some unbelievable stories. I was thinking about this because you said, well, I got some Brett Hull stories, and I definitely want to get to those. But, you know, Brett Hull was kind of the honorary mascot of the run to the Stanley Cup last year for the Blues. You kind of had your coming out party in St. Louis. Like once you moved there from Montreal and became a member of the Blues, that's when Craig Conroy, the Selke Trophy finalist or the guy that could be looked at as one of the best two-way forwards in the NHL, that's where it really started for you. So was it, I know it wasn't your team and last year was disappointing, the exit in the playoffs, but did you have a little bit in you that felt kind of nice for St. Louis being able to win that Stanley Cup last spring?
Oh, 100%. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, hey, obviously, first and foremost, the Calgary Flames. I mean, I wanted to win the Cup. But once we were out and it was heading the way it was, that city, you know, is a great sports town. The way they treat people, the way, you know, it's a Midwest city that they love their sports. I mean, whether it was in baseball, when the Rams were there, you know, they just support you. So, you know, and there's such a loyal following with St. Louis. I mean, when I go back, there's still, you know, so many people that when I was playing there, they're still there at every game cheering them on, you know. So that's for the city to be able to win that and all the alumni and all the guys that have been a part of it that are still there, you know, I thought it was nice the way they treated everybody. You know, they just, with the players, with the family, with all the workers, everything they did was first class. And then they also with Holly and Chaser and that whole crew, you know, it was just exciting to see the city, and they deserved it. You know, this year I was hoping it was going to be the Calgary Flames, but if it could have been anybody, I was so happy for them. It's a great spot and a great city.
So you got to St. Louis in Brett Hull's, I guess it would have been his second last year. You spent 2 years as a teammate of Hull before he left to go join the Dallas Stars, and we all know what happened once he got to Dallas. So you spent 2 years with Hull, right?
Yeah, you know, and the one thing, like Hull kind of had that reputation, like, you know, he's brash, he's loud, everything. So you're going in there and you're thinking, don't want to get on his bad side. Pretty much St. Louis is Brett Hull. You know, the only reason the Blues are still there is because of Brett Hull. So, you know, I roll in and we're in Colorado and I'm thinking, okay. And sure enough, I'm sitting there. I'm, you know, I came from the minors too. So I wasn't even up in Montreal. I was going from Fredericton. I get into Colorado for the game and I'm sitting there and obviously I don't have any gloves. Like they give me a brand new pair of gloves. Hubby has about 5 or 6 pairs at all time with him. So he switches them every period and he just has a lot of pairs of gloves. So he walked over and, you know, he said, hey, kid, what's going on? Want to use one of my pair of gloves? I'm like, what? I'm like, oh, okay, sure. So Hully gives me the gloves. I score that game. I don't think he scored. He's like, I'm going to need to take those gloves back. I'm like, no way you're getting these gloves back. If I'm 1 for 1, you're never getting the gloves back. But you know what? That's what made Hully such a good guy. He always let you know where you stood in the, you know, with him, and he was just he was actually a great teammate. I mean, I think people think, you know, they hear, oh, Brett Hull this, Brett. He was an unbelievable teammate, and the one thing, he always just wanted to win and do what was best for the team. I mean, obviously he loved scoring goals more than anything, but with that said, he was a lot of fun, and, you know, to only be able to play, it was disappointing when he left, because you're like, oh, you're playing with one of the greatest goal scorers of all time. Even though it wasn't on his line, it was fun to watch every moment, every time he got on the ice, because you thought he could score from anywhere, anytime. So it was pretty special.
When you, because you then would then go to Calgary and spent a lot of time with Jerome, and in a lot of ways, it kind of went from Brett Hull as the best pure goal scorer in the NHL. I mean, what, he had like 73 years in a row, and the game changed, obviously. And from Hull, the torch was kind of passed to Jerome in terms of being the preeminent goal scorer in the NHL for a period of time. And for the longest time, Jerome was the game's best goal scorer. Obviously different players, but in terms of similarities, did you see any between Brett Hull and Jerome Iginla?
You know what? I mean, Jerome did a lot of times with, like, when he'd go to the net, he would go to the net with, I'm going to shoot the puck myself. I'm going to knock every defenseman. You know, he did it with raw power. And, you know, even though they both have great shots, Holly just had that quick release that you couldn't, you know, you're like, are you kidding me? Like, the way he could shoot at his one-timer, I always kind of joke around that. Jerome's one-timer was like 4 inches wide. Holly's was 4 feet wide. He could get a puck in front of him, behind him. It didn't matter. Wherever it was, if it was anywhere around Holly, he could get it in. I'm like, Jerome's one-timer had to be in the wheelhouse. He'd be like, he'll probably kill me when he hears this. But that was the difference. I mean, I think, but Jerome, when he went to the net, I mean, he wasn't going to be denied. You know, he would literally have 2-3 guys on his back, and he would, you know, I'm going to score, you know, and if it's a rebound, he's getting the rebound, he's out battling, but they both have that hunger to score goals. Like, you can't believe, I mean, no matter what happens, every time they go on the ice, they're planning on, you know, on scoring, but they both had great shots. I mean, the release, you know, the way they kind of get into open and quiet areas. The one thing about Jerome was, I used to think, if I just can lay it to an area and he has to outcompete a guy, I'm putting my money on Jerome every time. You know, he'd say, oh, it doesn't have to be right on my stick. Just lay it to a spot. I'll out battle somebody. Where Holly, I think, was more, he'd sit in the lead sometimes, find those areas, and then once it's on a stick, it's in the net before you know it. You know, he could pick corners, and, you know, to see that shot, I have never seen him quite like it. And it's one of those where you're like, wow, you know, it's on a stick and off the stick is quicker than anything I've ever seen. You know, and even with Al MacInnis there, it's just different. His was more snapshot, quick, but his one-timer was as good as anybody I've ever seen, and Jerome's was too. I mean, that was the thing, the power they could get off it, but the hunger to score goals was in both of those guys.
Okay, I got to take you back to right when you got to St. Louis in 1996. It would have been, correct me if I'm wrong, but that would have been your first year there, would have been your first training camp there, would have been weeks after the U.S. won the World Cup in Canada, right?
No, so was it that year? I think it was that year. You're right. So I actually was in. No, that's the year I got traded in there.
Okay, because so you started with Montreal and then got traded there.
I was in Montreal watching the games. I was at the games live, watching the games in training camp. Like,
gotcha.
I went up there. Yeah, so I was, and then on, I think it was October when I got traded, that was, you know, that's when it started for me there.
Okay, yeah, October 1996 is when you got traded to St. Louis. So, yeah, you would have been in Montreal for training camp that year. Because we had this question yesterday. We were having a conversation, and we were talking about players growing up that you absolutely hated. And anybody who played on that 1996 team, a 14-year-old Pat absolutely despised. And number one on that list was Brett Hull, because here's a guy born in Canada playing in red, white, and blue. You're like, how can this traitor do that to Canada? This was what went through my mind when I was 13, 14 years old. So I need you to talk to, you know, early teen Pat and tell me why I shouldn't have hated Brett Hull.
You know what? I think Hully wanted to play for Canada. They never invited him to anything. That was what it came down to. They just never invited him. And then he kind of said, you know what? I have an opportunity to play with the U.S. And I think once he made that allegiance and he moved over, there was no going back. I mean, that would be, hey, I love living in Canada, I love it, but I'm still American. You know, I still played for the American Olympic team. I still did all the stuff for USA. So it's a fine line. You know, that's where it is. But I don't think he did it out of, you know, he said, hey, I had to make a decision. One team was offering me a chance to play. The other one really wasn't when I was young. So I went with the opportunity. You know, it's got to be interesting for, like, you know, the Foots and all of these different people, how to pick nowadays, because it seems like it's even more than when Holly did it. But, you know, he was kind of the first one that said, oh, I got to make a decision. And, you know, and he made it. But I don't think he ever did it out of spite or anything like that. He just, like, I had a chance to play for one and I didn't for the other. So, you know, I'm going to play.
I do know the reasons why. Yeah. This was irrational, young Pat. I've come to be quite a guy who can score 80 goals in a season. I'm a big fan of Hulls now. I'm like, that guy was an absolute beast. Just at the time when you're all wrapped up in the flag cheering for Canada and these Yanks beat Canada in Canada in 1996. Was he a guy that you looked up to? Like, you were still pretty young at that time. Was Brett Hull big for you as you were breaking into pro hockey?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you think about when he played at Duluth, like, you know, you'd see him holding on the Sports Illustrated, the three sticks, the shot, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, he was kind of, he's a legend, you know, and that's just like with him, McDonald, just that whole team. When you kind of look back and you say, Mike Richter actually went to Northwood where I went to, you know, prep school. So you're kind of rooting for him. I mean, and these are guys you've been watching and you know how good they are and what they've been doing in the NHL. And then, to see him in that, to see how they stack up against Canada, who I thought had the best team, and to be able to come away and win that thing, it was unbelievable. It was so good for USA Hockey. I know, it's like when the Olympics happened in 80. Those are certain points in to say, hey, you know what, we have arrived with the NHL players. We're right there with them on the best stage in the world, you know, to say, okay, look, U.S. just won. That it just seems like I'd love to know the spike in hockey in the U.S. at that point, after that, because it was such a big deal. I mean, it really was to be able to beat Canada in Canada. That's it's unheard of, really.
Yeah. Craig Conroy's with us. Ryan, got anything as we start to wrap things up with Mr. Conroy?
Totally. I got two more for you. Last time we saw something close to best on best was the World Cup three falls ago. And I always sort of felt like the Americans got the short end of the stick there, because all those great young American players like Matthews and Eichel were on that U21 team or whatever it was. If you had Canada, USA, U23, if you had Canada, USA best on best right now, how competitive is it? And if you had to look at the younger age groups, how much has that gap closed? Or would you say the Americans developmentally are going to be churning out more players moving forward, just given how much the game can grow in new markets there where everyone's pretty much exposed to hockey in Canada?
Well, I think, the big thing is like markets. Like when I got to L.A., I couldn't believe the program in L.A., like how, it's just growing everywhere and there's just so many more people that you definitely feel like, hey, if we continue to go at this pace, U.S. should be able to out-muscle, but it's amazing. I mean, you look at the young guys, I mean, obviously McDavid's best player in the world right now. It's just a matter of, you don't have to be just to watch the game to see what he can do, but it would be fun. And that's the thing. I think we've closed the gap. I think, on any given night, and there's not just us with Sweden and, the Russians, anybody could win. They really could. I think that's how it's kind of came back around. But it's amazing to think about all that time ago, maybe this was something that jump-started it, but with all the programs, with all the pro guys that have stayed down, the NHLers from Canada, mostly Canadians, are kind of getting all these programs going. They did it in St. Louis to see all those guys in the first round. That's because Al McInnis, Keith Tkachuk, and that whole crew, Kelly Chase, that whole group of guys. I think Brownie was there too, so that's the way it's really been being built up there. And the U.S. is really trying to, I'm on the USA program. And they're definitely trying, they take stuff that the Canadians do. I mean, that's the one thing about Canada. Everything's first class and they do things right. So, I mean, if you can kind of emulate what they're doing and then on that bigger population, you're hoping you can draw. But to see Hughes last year, to see that under-18 program have all those first rounders, it's definitely coming, but, there's a lot of great players in Canada, too, and really across the world right now.
Yeah, I'd sign up for any of that. Give us a best of seven between the two. I'd watch that. Last one for you, Connie. Do you have a favorite or a most proud story? You're now into your 10th year as a manager, not a player. In terms of a draft, maybe development, maybe it's both. Is there a story of a player in this organization or one that you're most proud about how you guys as an organization groomed them and turned them into who they are?
That's interesting. I think the player I'm the most proud of that came in and did the most, like from where he was to where he is now, and he's actually no longer, is probably Garnet Hathaway. I mean, for a guy to come in on an American League deal and to work the way he did in the, in, you know, in the American League, earn an NHL contract, you know, play so well last few years in the NHL, and then get his deal to, you know, in Washington, that it's pretty amazing. I mean, obviously, the drafting of Johnny Gaudreau and, you know, just the emotions when I went in and got him, and I was a little nervous that we weren't going to get him for a while, but, you know, finally got that done, got him back in and played in that first game in Vancouver. I mean, those are definitely special, but there's so many, you know, there's so many things that you kind of look back on that it's just so much fun. You know, you say, okay, hey, we're building something here, you know, and obviously to win the one playoff round against Vancouver was the most exciting for the whole team, but I'm hoping we can do more of that. That's the real ultimate goal, is to win playoff rounds and win a Stanley Cup for the Calgary Flames. You know, that's why I'm surprised we traded Brahal. I asked, because I knew it was coming on. I asked Al McNeil yesterday. I talked to him on the phone, and I said, "Why did he go? We did not want to trade Brett Hall. He had like 43 goals or whatever in the American League when he was down there. But we felt we had a chance to win a Stanley Cup, so we made the deal." He goes, "We did not want to put Brett Hall in the deal, 100%. But that was the only thing to get it done, and we felt like with Ramage and everything, all the other pieces, we had to do it." Because I was like, "Oh my God, Chopper!" He goes, "Well, we won the cup. That was the goal."
It's what nice Peter Marr? Peter Marr to. Peter Marr always says that if they didn't have Ramage, they wouldn't have won that Stanley Cup in 1989. So that's one that, like, as much as you don't want to give up one of the best goal scorers in league history, you did get a cup out of it. And as Pinder said, flags fly forever, right?
Yeah, and that's what Al said. He said, "Hey, we did not want to give this guy up. We wanted to keep him here, but we thought we had a team that had a chance to win, and we had it for him." You know, he goes, "If you're in that position, you feel that comfortable." Yeah, I'm like, "Oh, I don't know if I would have done it, Chopper." He's like, "Well, yeah, now you know, you scored 700 goals in the week, so it's easy." I'm like, "Good point." Good point. But I got one Holly Steinle. I got a million Holly stories, but one that I love. I think we're playing San Jose. Pierre Turgeon, him, got a 2-on-1 early in the first period. And Pierre, for whatever reason, kind of looked Holly off and shot it. And the goalie made the save. You know, so Holly gets back to the bench and he's like 513 goals, 310 or whatever Pierre had at the time. And I'm kind of listening on the bench. He's like, I guess I'm just a decoy out there. He's like, "Unbelievable. You didn't even look over. You weren't even thinking about passing any." So he's kind of giving him, you know, grief on the bench. So I'm thinking, third period, they get another 2-on-1. Pierre comes down, the defenseman slides across, kind of like the way Bobby used to have our D come across. So Pierre kind of threw it over his legs and pants. And, you know, it was probably right around shin high. And, I mean, like clockwork, Holly took that thing out of the air, top corner, and you're like, "Wow, that's a goal." Like, it's probably a foot and a half off the ice, but he shot it like it was on the ice and it was in the net before he even blinked. When we're coming back, I'm like, "Oh, what's Holly going to do?" Because he always has something to say. So we're sitting there. He sits down, and he's kind of looking. He's like, he looks down and back and forth. He goes, "I never said it had to be a good pass." The whole bench just cracks up. But that's Holly to a G. I mean, I couldn't wait to hear what he was going to say every time in the bench. Like, you know what? He just is quick-witted, smart, and funny, and he could score goals like nobody I've ever seen. So it was always fun to kind of see what he's going to do. I just wish we would have been able to keep him in St. Louis, and, you know, he would have won the cup there, because that would have been the ultimate thing for the Blues for sure.
That's awesome. Good stuff, Craig. Really appreciate it, as always. Hopefully we help kill some of your day. You certainly help kill some of ours. We really appreciate it today.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Take care.
See ya.